This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Get us wherever you get your podcasts from and find us on pretty much all the social medias now. And also, if you happen to be in a generous and giving mood, you can support us on Patreon. We're rolling out some new interesting stuff that we're doing for our Patreon monthly sustainers, as well as for our PayPal monthly sustainers. Anything you can do, we really appreciate it. Today, I'm really excited about this interview. I have got two awesome women with me here on the call today. I have Madeline Hoffman, who, if you don't know Madeline yet, which you should, but if you don't, she ran for Senate for the Green Party of New Jersey last year. Welcome to the show, Madeline.
Thank you very much, Heather. I'm glad to be here.
And I also have another amazing woman, Angela Walker. If you don't know Angela, then she ran for vice president for the Socialist Party last year. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Hey, thank you.
So let's start with Angela. I'm going to ask you both the same question. As women who ran for very high-level offices outside of the corporate duopoly, what was that experience like for you?
Well, it was... It was very eye-opening. I mean, you have to figure out how you want to, because socialism has been, you know, red baiting is alive and well in this country, and trying to get people to not be afraid of a socialist candidate is, you know, your first step, you know, because you want to not be, you know, just limited to people who think like you. You want to make sure that the message of your platform is getting out to people who may not necessarily ascribe to socialism or know what it is. So I think that was one of the biggest challenges, is to just simply let people know this isn't this big scary thing. This is something that applies to your daily life, and let me explain how this works for you.
So what were some of your platform elements that you ran on when you were running?
Well, one of the biggest things was the legalization and decriminalization of marijuana, and also attaching a rider, if you will, to that, to where the communities that have been most harmed by negative drug policies would have preference in the growing industry for marijuana. So that was one of our things. Rebuilding green and reinvesting in infrastructure in a green way was another part of it. We did a lot. There was a lot, but those are two of the biggest things that I'm thinking about. Obviously immigrant justice. There's no walls. We don't do that. And making sure that people are not being mistreated because of their immigration status. So there were a bunch of things.
It sounds like very important stuff, and you were probably, you know, some of the only voices out there talking about these things. You certainly were not getting that from the corporate establishment parties.
Oh, no. I mean, and I think one of the things that, you know, aside from the fact that I am a socialist, but one of the things that my running mate was Mimi Soltysik, who ran for president, and one of the dopest people I know. And one of the aims of the campaign was simply just what you said, to make sure that people had these things on their radar, that this is not some pie in the sky utopian idea. This is entirely doable. You can divest from investing in private prisons and reinvest that money in things that we need to be spending on. That's not something that something ethereal. That's very doable. And getting people to understand that was a big part of our campaign.
Did you feel that people that you actually got a chance to talk to, because I know media does not like to cover you if you're outside of the duopoly, but the people that you actually got a chance to talk to, did that really resonate with them?
Yes, especially the part where you're talking about immediate emancipation of people who are, or immediate release of people who are held in prison for nonviolent marijuana convictions. Yeah, that goes over very, very well. And I mean, most socialist concepts, when you take the academia out of it and make it something approachable for people, you know, the idea that you should not have to pay for your healthcare, that, you know, as a citizen in this country, you deserve that simply because you're here. Those things resonate with people, especially people on the people who are on the lower socioeconomic end of things. And it resonated with a whole lot of people. You know, they, you know, folks aren't going to go along with everything, but for the most part, absolutely, our message was very well received by a lot of people.
Do you think you might run again for some office?
No. No.
Why not?
Yeah, that's the follow-up question. Why not?
It's exhausting.
It is.
It's exhausting. And I know that Madeline can speak to that too, because you're out front, you're speaking to people. I mean, I'm actually, believe it or not, an introvert. And I prefer to not be in the front if I don't have to be. And it's a very, you're on, you know what I'm saying? People are, the spotlight's on you. And it's constant. And I find it exhausting. And, you know, I like the idea of being able to talk to people about issues and, you know, be the one at the back with the prod, like, you know, let me remind you, we don't have to do things this way. There's a whole nother way of doing that. It's a little bit quieter and easier for me.
I think that's actually more common amongst leftists than people might think. I have horrible social anxiety, and I know Madeline also, I want to ask you the same question, but I know you don't really like the spotlight on you either.
No. I mean, my whole life I've kind of been the person in the background, being the peacemaker between my parents, or you know, being the one who's organizing people and then kind of pushing people forward. But there is something about running for office that I find it's exhausting, absolutely, for all the same reasons that Angela was mentioning. But I also find that it's an exhilarating platform to use, because you can address all of the issues as a peace activist or an environmental activist, as I had been for 40 years combined. You basically, you stay within a certain box of issues and concerns that you address, and you try to make them relevant as possible going outside of that box. But as a candidate for U.S. Senate, was able to address all kinds of issues and start to make connections on all kinds of issues, which I really wasn't able to do before. And then to meet people who are actually doing work on these issues and get inspired by and energized by the work that they're doing, and to say, and I think Angela is 100% correct, the socialist ideas resonate with a lot of people because they're common sense. And
yes,
and so many of us either don't have health insurance, or our health insurance is very costs us way too much money. It doesn't cover things that we need to have covered. And so I look back at what happened when Bernie Sanders ran in 2016, and I saw millions of people literally coming out to hear him speak. And he was speaking, some of what he was speaking were socialist ideas. And so I know that I'm going to mention Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump in the same sentence. And then Donald Trump, what, a week ago, or the State of the Union address, maybe 2.5 to 3 weeks ago, he said, this country will never become socialist. The United States will never be. Why did he feel compelled to say that if the ideas from people who use socialism in their names, whether it's Socialist Party like you, or the Democratic Socialists who aren't really socialists, but that's another story, they use socialist in their names, and then the Greens who call themselves eco-socialists, if those ideas weren't taking hold, why would the president have to say we'll never be a socialist country? I'm encouraged by the fact that it was named by him.
Did you have something to say about that, Angela?
I think that Madeline is exactly right. To have the individual who's sitting in the Oval Office right now refuse to dignify him with a title. But the individual that is sitting in that office right now, to have him say something like, this country will never be socialist, I wanted to tell him, sugar, we're already there.
Yeah, that's
people
true.
Just don't get the entire concept of it. And the idea, especially as people are being disenfranchised with work, this shutdown, I think, probably created people who are really ready to hear about owning the means of production. Never considered it before. So I think he kind of nudged us a little bit closer to socialism, if you want to be honest.
And, you know, Angela, you mentioned something that reminds me of what I was thinking during that time, which is I wasn't aware. Yes, I was aware that many people are living paycheck to paycheck in this country, but for federal employees who get maligned much, you know, public employees are always maligned about how all the benefits and all to be able to not be able to pay the bills missing one paycheck or coming up on the second one really, really was an eye opener for me to know how many people in all kinds of professions doing all kinds of work were living paycheck to paycheck. And, the difference between the wealthiest in this country and the poorest in this country, it keeps growing. And so you see money pouring out to go and finance our wars, not my wars, but the country's wars. And you see so many people who can't, who if they miss one paycheck, are on the edge. And, it just confirms, just looking at, so that shutdown, like you said, it confirms what some of us, what we know, but we don't see it concretely in front of our faces all the time.
Especially in a segment of our population that thought they were quote unquote safe, had safe jobs, had security, and to understand that can be pulled out from under you. I mean, the stories coming from the shutdown were heartbreaking. And all too common, because people who have been living that way for so long anyway are basically telling government workers, welcome to our world. This is what we've been trying to tell y'all. There is no safe.
No.
So what are you ready to do?
Security was ripped away from everybody and they realized we're all in the class together. You may have thought you were safe before, but that was just an illusion and we're all in the same class and it's not the capitalist class.
No, and then also during that time when the polar vortex hit and we saw pictures of homeless all over the country. And of course the homelessness issue in Los Angeles has hit the media before, but between Chicago and Newark and New Jersey and all over the country, people who couldn't or had a really difficult time staying alive and warm and sheltered during that time period, that was really eye-opening also. And I don't know. In my campaign, I spent some time interviewing homeless people in Newark, and talk about not realizing how close any one of us is to being homeless too. Because one of the women I interviewed had multiple advanced degrees. She spoke multiple languages, and between her student loan debt and her inability to find work, she was out in the street. So I think people are they're definitely feeling it. And so, and the word socialism really isn't as taboo as it was.
I did want to move on next to talking about, you know, we've got this crop of neoliberal women who are throwing their hats into the ring to run for president. And before the call, I was talking a little bit about how last time around, you know, all of us who were not Hillary Clinton supporters were told, as women, that there was a special place in hell for us that if we didn't support her. And, you know, I know I'm not going to be supporting any of this new crop of neoliberal women at all. I wanted to talk a little bit about what this... why this reaction, there's so many neoliberal women versus what would a really awesome progressive or socialist or communist take it really look like.
And so we're talking about the difference between real candidates versus corporate ones?
yes. Like what you've seen of this neoliberal women versus what would, like, you know, a candidate that of women, a ticket of women that you could get behind look like versus what we are being handed now by the corporate duopoly.
I need a ticket of women that get it, that get that intersectionality should be built into what you do. If you are not connecting the relationships between race, gender, or non-gender expression, as you will, and class, and factoring all of those things into the way that you are addressing issues, you're going to lose people, and you should. If you're, and you know, I'm very fond of saying, if your socialism is not intersectional, I'm not messing with it, because there are other factors that come into play. With other than just class struggle, there are so many other things that come in at the same time with that are equally as important and need to be addressed. And so if these candidates are not intersectional in their approach, if they are not addressing the fact that capitalism, which they're not going to because they can't, because they're tied to it, but capitalism is the cause of what we are dealing with as far as the pain in this world. When we're talking about the disrespect of this planet, we are talking about capitalism. When we are talking about, you know, the way that immigrants are treated and the need for borders and walls, that's capitalist. All of those things stem from the evil that is capitalism. And these folks are not going to say that. I mean, the closest statement, and she's not even running for office, is Representative Ocasio-Cortez, who, you know, I get it. she's problematic in her way. However, she is the one person that came close to saying anything about divesting from keeping nonviolent marijuana offenders in prison and reinvesting with the legalization and decriminalization of marijuana in the economy. She's the one person that even came close to saying that. She's not running for president. So, I mean, they're not offering us anything we haven't. There's nothing revolutionary or transformative about what we're being offered. And since that's not what they're on and no one has the courage to do that, they don't deserve my support.
Right. Someone like Kamala Harris is the exact opposite of that. She was an attractive girl, you know.
it hurt my heart. She's so problematic. And I'm like, baby, no. And I'm listening to her on an interview on a radio program that gets a lot of folks who don't normally really, a lot of folks who are not excited about voting, you might want to say, and listening to her and I'm yelling at the radio. I'm like, but that's not true. You're not going far enough. Go on and say it. It's just like, you're not giving us anything. We're forced to, and people have to realize that we are being forced to sift through the information that people, that, you know, the jargon that people are throwing at us for something we can hold on to and say, okay, I can support this person without it turning my stomach. And that in itself is something we should have a problem with.
Yes, absolutely. Did you want to chime in now, Madeline?
Yeah, I have a lot to say on this topic. And I think I can, I'll start with the issue of money and the money in politics and how the political action committee money and the corporate money just the minute that someone, we see it with the new group of women who got elected to Congress, the minute they step outside of the lines, there's a wave that comes back at them so strong that they have to come back towards the center. And
yes.
It's going to be the same with the candidates for president as well. And this Green New Deal that has been discussed a lot, it actually played out in front of our eyes the other night. I was in Newark for a meeting of the Newark Water Coalition, trying to get action taken on the lead contamination of their water. And there was a young man, very fervent, very passionate, a young man with the Sunrise Group, who was talking about putting on a push in New Jersey to get the Green New Deal passed and approved. And a couple of us Greens in the room said, that's nice, but the Green New Deal that's being proposed, it's not the Green New Deal. It's not what the Greens have put forward for decades. And he said, I know. He said it's a copy and paste or a cut and paste job. And then my colleague said, oh, but it's taken all the good parts out of it.
Right.
Cut and paste or copy and paste. The good parts are what Angela's talking about, are those parts that directly confront capitalism and what capitalism needs to continue to profit, continue those profits rolling in. And those parts are confronting the military-industrial complex, confronting the $717 billion war budget, and getting that money out, or taking a percentage of that money and moving that into creating the jobs and addressing climate change. And if you don't do that, the Green New Deal, it's a lovely piece of paper, flaps in the wind, and it sounds okay, but it's all rhetoric. It's not going to get the job done. And apparently, too, a representative, Frank Pallone, is the one who's going to move it or not move it. And he gets a huge amount of money from the fossil fuel industry. And he's blocking it. He's blocking the congressional delegation in New Jersey from agreeing to the watered down version, not even the one that the Greens are talking about. So they're just, it's so hard. At least the young man, and I praise him for this, he acknowledged that it was a Green Party idea. And the main reason it concerns me that it's acknowledged as a Green Party idea is that the alternative parties, the socialists, the Greens, and others, we get, and this came up all the time, oh, you're running for office? Ha, ha, ha. Or, you know, you're not raising enough money. You can't be a serious candidate. You don't have enough money, or you're going to take votes away from this one and that one over and over and over again. And yet the first few initiatives coming up in Congress are ones that Greens and socialists have put forward for a long time. So you can't have it both ways. You know, do we matter or we don't matter? And,
right.
The thing is, I guess, the more you take from the socialists or the Greens, the more you're getting to challenging capitalism. And that's when those other two corporate duopoly parties clamp down and push down on you. Wouldn't it be nice if there were some Greens and socialists in Congress and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez could be pulled to the left, not only to the right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, talking about money and politics, you know, like, and the need for healthcare as a human right, you've got people like Kristen Gillibrand, who Pfizer is like her main donor. We know she's never going to fight for Medicare for all when all of her money's coming from Pfizer. Like, it's just never going to happen.
Right, and I saw a meme during the campaign on that where, and I don't know if this is true or not, but you know how things, even if they're not necessarily true, they sound so true, they could be real. This was one of those memes, and the meme said 70% of the Democratic Party's base, and I shouldn't be talking about them so much, but anyway, it gets to the heart of this issue. 70% of the base wants single-payer health care, but none of the donors wants it. So candidates were advised not to talk about it. And so this is the dilemma that we're in if we, you know, why neoliberalism is not what's going to change this country, but people who are unaffected by corporate money and corporate dollars can go in and say, this is what I believe in, and I'm not going to have Blue Cross Blue Shield, you know, in my ear tomorrow saying, you can't do that. And we need to build the movement that goes with it. We need to, it's not about us as candidates, not we are only the messenger. We're talking about building a movement to back, to push us forward and keep those ideas flowing once the elections are over.
Right. That actually leads really well to the next question. It was on my list of things I wanted to ask of, you know, how do we get there? What does this process look like? We all know, so it's so important that we start transitioning to a totally drastically different economy, one that values people and does not just value profit and corporate dollars. And so what's the process? How do we get there? We'll go back to Angela again.
I think one of the ways that we do it is simple conversations that are accessible to people who are not well versed in communist or socialist theory, people who understand what it is to live paycheck to paycheck. I mean, to make them understand that a lot of times they're practicing socialist ideals without even knowing that they are. Without labeling it one way or the other, but that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, something as simple as wanting to make sure that people are fed and that the state has a responsibility to its citizens to make sure that they're fed or that the people do it. Those are socialist ideas, and those are socialist ideas that people are embracing. And it's just, I think, relentlessly owning the fact that socialist concepts are socialist concepts and not sidestepping so that, you know, people who are well-meaning but still capitalist, like Ocasio-Cortez, are getting credit for some quote-unquote new idea. I think we have to be very vocal on the left about saying, no, we've been telling y'all that. This came from this. This is not a new idea. She is not espousing something that's new. We have been pushing this for decades in this country. And we have a legacy of things that we're continuing. So I think that the big thing is just not playing nice, not playing quiet, not playing small. Getting in people, you know, when these things come up about socialists and socialism, and people are very clearly not knowing which way to go, making sure that they understand exactly what we're talking about and that the concepts that they're warming to are socialist concepts and that they're accessible to people, particularly on the lowest socioeconomic end of the spectrum. Just having conversations and being very explicit and very clear and intentional about those conversations, because people are very easy to mislead, especially when you have someone who is a corporate candidate or a corporate politician who's appealing to them and who's seemingly bold and engaging. We have to make sure that people don't fall for the okey-doke with that and that they understand that she's a darling. However, she didn't come up with this. Let me tell you where this came from.
That's a great point. Thank you.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree with you more, Angela. You know, I spent time in Newark during my campaign and met with people who are homeless. At the same time that I was doing that, the city of Newark was offering, oh, now I can't remember the number, about $2 billion, I think, to Amazon to come in to Newark and build their facility. And they had lost that all it would have taken to keep this one homeless shelter open was 200,000 that had been misplaced. It might even be less than that. So I think it was $200,000 annually. And the city's talking about giving away $2 billion to Bezos and Amazon. And I think, you know, just by uniting some of the same folks who are homeless with people who are looking for a good job, with people who are looking to see their streets paved, with people who are looking to have affordable housing, not just, you know, not only homeless shelters, but affordable housing. And to watch this drama play out in front of us all. And now in Newark, what we know Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez had a role to play in Amazon pulling out of New York. But I heard others talk about there being some conditions on Amazon coming in that had to do with fair labor practices and some other things, which also pushed them out the door because it would require them to pay more money. But now Raz Baraka, the mayor of Newark, is trying to woo Amazon back into Newark. And I was at a meeting yesterday and people were scratching their heads. There's so many needs in Newark: clean water, replacement of old lead pipes, and so on. What is Raz Baraka doing, continuing to lure this billionaire back in, who's paid zero taxes, zero, on many million, you know, I don't remember the number of profits, but more in profit than most of us are going to see in our lifetimes. So this is what our role is, I think, as candidates and as socialists or eco-socialists, is to keep, like you said, Angela, keep talking to people, keep pointing it out, keep showing the gross inequalities there. And I have people, it doesn't take much, I think, to for that to have an impact on people. If there is a voice out there, not mainstream media, not corporate candidates, but alternative candidates and alternative media, I think our influence and our reach is growing all the time.
Well, I certainly hope so, being one of the members of the alternative media here.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you.
So one final question for both of you. What's the next step? We'll still go back to Angela again. What are you doing next? If people want to follow you and see what your kind of trouble you're getting into, what's your next plans?
Well, I'm a dump truck driver. I mean, you don't get more proletarian than that. And so I pretty much keep my, you know, I keep my head down. I tell people, you know, I have a specific set of skills, and if you find that this area needs my skills, then I'll break them out of, you know, I'll come out of organizer hibernation. But for the most part, you know, people that I talk to, that I come in contact with, that I feel comfortable discussing my politics with, because I live in South Carolina, so you already know. Yes. It's a little different here, but there are people who, like I said, are very receptive to socialist concepts without necessarily understanding that they are socialists. Because, like you said, Madeline, they just make sense. So I do have those conversations with people. As low key as I've tried to be, I guess I can't be low key all the time. So. Yeah, that's pretty much what's happening. I drive my truck, I keep my head down, and I talk about socialism whenever I get the chance.
You are a very important voice in the socialist movement, you know, Angela, and I don't think you can keep your head down forever. Just your voice resonates far too much for you to not break it out occasionally.
I'm honored. Thank you.
How about you, Madeline? I kind of know what the next steps for Madeline are, and I'm very excited to be a part of them.
Thanks, and... Angela, let me say, I'll echo Heather a little bit there. You know, maybe in a year or 2 years, you won't feel as the exhaustion as much anymore, and you'll see or want to come back out there full strength, full speed ahead. Because I agree with her that, you know, we need your voice needs to be heard. So, but I mean, I understand how exhausting this can be. My next step, to form the exploratory committee, as I mentioned, to run against Senator Cory Booker, who is going to be running for both the U.S. presidency and U.S. Senate in 2020. And he had, again, back to the city, no, it's not the city of Newark, this is Trenton this time, has what they passed, what they call the Cory Booker law, which will allow him to do both. Instead of passing
to run for president and senator at the same time.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Yeah, it was not legal in New Jersey to run for senator and president at the same time, and they passed a law specifically for him. But, you know, this law may also apply to Madeline, and if she wanted to run for senator
hey.
At the same time.
I mean, the fact that they call it the Cory Booker law, and not, it's not us giving it that name. The people in Trenton called it the Cory Booker law. When Trenton needs to be passing laws like ranked choice voting and dealing with issues of gerrymandering and
cannabis reform, cannabis legislation, you know, they're saying not till next year now we might get that.
Yeah, the cannabis legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. but also, and then they did pass unanimous, not unanimously, but by in a bipartisan way. A law that increased voting rights for prisoners. I don't have the specific, it's S21 that just passed recently. But my goal in running again is to focus a lot, as I did before, on the endless wars that this country is getting itself into to continue. By 2020, whatever is happening in Venezuela will have resolved, I hope. But both Democrats and Republicans, even the ones who consider themselves to be quote unquote progressive, are behind this war machine. And if we don't stop the war machine and all the money going into the military, we're not going to stop destroying the world and destroying people's homes, countries, cultures. We need to stop that. We need to stop draining all the money from our communities. And we need people, we need to understand that the U.S. doesn't have the right to invade anytime, any place, anywhere it wants to, just because its corporations are going to profit from it. And this is a long road to get to the point where people are going to, where the peace movement or the anti-war movement grows to be big enough that the politicians are going to listen. And so my campaign is going to focus on that issue, on getting the money back into communities and continuing to work with those people who are already trying to make their communities better. This can't be done in isolation. It can't be done with me sitting here and saying these are the issues. No, it has to be side by side with homeless, with prisoners, with immigrants trying to shut down the ICE facility. We were working on that with another candidate for a 6-county freeholder, Jay Arena, and Jobs and Equal Rights Campaign. And just the other day, there was a story that came out showing how horrible the conditions are within that facility. Now, I know that prisons around the country also, conditions are horrible, but Joe DiVincenzo is a Democrat and he's enabling a Republican agenda. And so these folks who say they can't stand Trump, they can't stand this, they can't stand that, and still enable it, they have to be held accountable for that. And the only way that can happen is by, and I think, my belief, is through independent third parties and an independent movement. And was at a meeting yesterday too, where there were a number of different people who are doing work with an alternative party. And we were talking about having a people's assembly where all the different parties come together, non-corporate parties, that is, and adopt a platform that crosses over. And so we're not going to form a new party, but we may all adopt a similar platform and just keep the voices out there growing louder, involving more and more people, but really involving the people, not the candidates. Are you going to move to New Jersey, Angela?
I hadn't planned it.
I think I can find a network that might like to have you on as a content provider.
Yes. I will definitely keep that in mind.
Okay. Yeah, it's been great having both of you here today. It's been such a good conversation. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Such badass fellow socialist women here. It's, socialist women are going to lead the way, I believe.
I second it.
To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us here again and giving your time to listen to our podcast. We appreciate it so much that you listen to us, that you share our stuff around on social media. Help us spread this reach and the words of socialism as wide and far as possible. We need your help. We are nothing without you guys. Our entire network, we take no corporate money. We take no advertising dollars. It's all built by activists. So we can build this community for activists, for anti-capitalists, for those who are trying to make a counterculture against this establishment system. And that's why we have to keep asking you guys to help us out. If you can go on to our website, www.njrevolutionradio.com, and click on that contribute button, even if it's only $5 a month, that really can help us. You know, we aren't that expensive of an organization yet, but we are growing rapidly. But so far, you know, even if like 20 of you can give us $5 a month, that would really help us to keep things going on and make sure that these voices are getting out there. So anything you can do, we appreciate it so much. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.